All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of our ICAD Task Force meeting. Quick roll call, and we will jump right into today's agenda. Joined by our co-chair, Cheryl Turney and Alex Goss. We also have Erin Meary, Anil Jain, Arian Malik, Denise Webb, Gus Gerarsi, Jim Jurgis, Rich Landon, and Steve Brown. I do know a couple of other members that will be joining us late, but are there any others on the phone that haven't been announced yet?
This is Sasha.
Hi, Sasha. Anyone else? Great. All right, I will turn it over to our co-chairs to get us started for today.
I think, Cheryl, are you all set?
Yes, I am, thank you. Thank you, Lauren, thank you, Alex. So today, I'm gonna do a little summary and on what happened at the high tech meeting and then also what we discussed in last week's meeting. And then Alex is gonna lead the discussion that we're gonna further on the broader intersection of clinical administrative data that we began last week. Then we have time for public comments and then we're gonna do next steps. So we can go to the next slide. So as you may recall from last week, we began the discussion of the broader intersection of clinical and administrative data. We reviewed some final recommendations and comments that we had discussed from our overall paper. And then we had a really great discussion that began the work into the broader intersection discussion. And we really focused on three or four themes, and those were patient at the center, and what does that really mean if we look beyond prior authorization. Excuse me, hold on a second. That's something in my eye. And then we looked at additional parameters that we might want to discuss around transparency and what that would require. And then also looking at, you know, making sure that our discussion and recommendations focus on, you know, where people are. And we know that across the continuum, there are many different partners, healthcare partners that are in different places. They have different levels of sophistication when it comes to EMR systems, when it comes to their ability to utilize tools, you know, from a patient or a caregiver's perspective. So we started discussing all of those things, and we'll really look forward to a more robust discussion on that today. Alex and I put some thoughts together offline and bringing those back to you today to spur the discussion. Really do appreciate everybody's work as we try to start with that, you know, picture that we had last week, which was really only meant to, you know, help us move in this new direction. So thank you for that. And why don't we go to the next slide? So the discussion in the high tech meeting was quite energetic and very helpful. We started by providing recognition for all of the extensive work that this entire team has done and the support we've gotten from OMC and Excel. We went into some detail in the guiding principles and ideal state, which I covered, and then Alice covered the recommendations and discussed each of those at length in the session with high tech. We got a lot of questions, which was really, really good, and did get some recommendations. So, you know, in the feedback that we received in the session, we got a lot of questions related to releasing the paper, which early, and additional healthcare partners who we've already heard from mostly, who wanted to see the finished paper before it's actually published and get another opportunity to weigh in on it before it actually goes to ONC. And that's clearly not the protocol. So what we have discussed and what we are doing and will continue to do is, you know, present sections of the paper for us to comment on and review. Of course, we want to review and edit the entire paper with the task force as a group, and that is appropriate based on the public forum that we're in. But releasing the paper in a way that perhaps would not support the current protocol for federal work wouldn't serve any of us. So we have indicated to all of those that have comments, A, to participate in our meetings on a weekly basis, comment at the public comment section, or submit written comments to us, which we are taking all of those into account. As you know, we've been cross-checking our guiding principles, our ideal state, as well as recommendations based on all of the healthcare partners that have come forward and either presented virtually to us or in writing or via email. So we will continue to do that as we have done in the past. That seemed to be the theme of many of the public comments that came in during the HITECH meeting, but also there was definitely a theme to focus more on the patient and the caregiver involvement. And, you know, to that end, because we were only presenting a summary of each of the recommendations, some of the detail behind it that was in the paper itself wasn't as obvious, number one, and it wasn't highlighted. So I do think we have much of that, but we did want to focus on that. And so as you will see in the broader intersection discussion we have today, we want to review that topic to make sure that we are looking at patient at the center. That is one of the themes that we need to make sure is there for our broader intersection conversations. And also we will be re-reviewing the paper to ensure that that theme comes out throughout the paper. The other topic that came up to some degree, I believe that this one was raised by Cynthia Fisher, was the price transparency. And the notion that she was presenting was that, you know, a patient should be able to get their price estimates for an approved procedure, and it shouldn't be approved for a specific doctor or facility, I guess, but they should be able to then take that approval and various prices and measure it against, you know, the open market. Personally, I think that's a difficult concept to implement because in today's world, at least, we all have contracted providers. So the assumption is that contracted providers are going to be less expensive than non-contracted providers. And most of the tools that are provided to patients via their employer groups or their payers will allow them to choose a provider and should have estimates for them in terms of what the cost is. But the complaint, which is a fair one, is that not all of the costs are necessarily in that picture. And so what might happen is you might go to a facility for a procedure. This actually happened to me recently because I had to have a mole removed, and I got a bill from the facility that said they weren't in network. Now, I'm being told that was a mistake and they actually are in network, but you know, no one wants to go to a provider and then find out they get a facility bill, A, they didn't know about it, or B, that it wasn't a contracted provider, so all of a sudden they're responsible for $12,000 they didn't know about, or maybe the anesthesiologist wasn't in the network. So, you know, certainly this is a concept that we need to take into consideration as we are discussing what the recommendations are. I don't know if this is a problem that we can solve with what we're putting forward, but it's certainly a concept we need to address. We've already discussed it as part of our group, and I do think it's something you're going to hear more about as we talk about the broader intersection. But, you know, did want to make sure that we gave that ample time to have that discussion here. I think the theme of some of the other comments that came from HITECH were, you know, certainly the convergence of standards, where there is some intersection between standards groups and that recommendation that indicates we should try to resolve where there are conflicts or harmonize where there are conflicts. I will say there are probably going to be some, scrutiny from outside as a result of that recommendation. So there was a suggestion that if we provided more detail in those areas, it would be helpful to us and to ONC as they're considering the options. And then there was also some themes relative to, pilots and the standards promotion model that would be utilized similar to what we do with the current standards models and what is currently happening with USCDI, and how do we really get the administrative data, looked at as part of a USCDI future version. And then there was another one that I highlighted was, that's the patient engagement journey. And I actually put a picture together, which we're probably not going to share today, but it was one that I didn't present it to high tech, but I thought about it after the high tech meeting, where in today's world, even with the current interoperability focus, a patient would go into a third-party app and really still has some burden, because in order to connect to all of the different healthcare partners that patient has, they need to provide some logon information for each of those partners. And that in and of itself can be burdensome depending on the health condition of the patient and the number of healthcare providers that patient has. And oftentimes the ability, if you can't remember the logon for something with these systems, I've experienced myself, don't reset passwords immediately. So often you have to wait and then come back into it, and by the time you get the information, go through the whole process of forgetting it again, especially if you're, at the ages where you're writing things down, they're on little pieces of paper, and okay, now I can't find the paper, which you're not supposed to be writing it down in the first place, but everybody does. So you can see in a real-world example that I sort of put together on the page, and I'll hopefully share it in a future week, that there's still some burden even for the patient to try to get all of this data into one app and then have it available. And then when it's in the app, how is it presented to them? Is it presented in a way that's going to make it easier for them to see what is going on, and how will they be able to assimilate that with each of the providers that they're visiting? So there could still be some burden and complexity with having the data all in their phone, all in one app. And this is stuff we will have to get to see. But anyway, I think that's enough of that piece of it. Any questions on?
Yeah, we have Arian's hand is up.
Okay. Go ahead, Arian.
Yep, thank you. Yeah, so a comment and then a suggestion. So I definitely noted the level of enthusiasm that many folks had about participating in the draft report and viewing it. I agree with everything that you said. I think I would suggest a positive frame on exactly the same comment. I think you heard me during the meeting itself try to present some of that positive frame out. There will be multiple opportunities for interested parties to be able to comment on the report through any of the mechanisms that are provided for public comment, and I think we should encourage participants to continue to do that and reassure them that all of the material in the report will be publicly available prior to approval of the report by the full HITAC. That's, I mean, nothing in that statement is contrary to the policy and procedure that we follow. Let people know where they can comment. And I guess the comment to all of that is, this is really emblematic of the importance that the U.S. healthcare system places on this topic. There's a lot of passion. There's a lot of interest folks have, and I think it's reflective. And all the comments were very positive. I think it's reflective of how important this work that we're doing is. So thank you.
There are no further hands up, Cheryl. But if I may,
I'm raising my hand.
I think that Arianne makes a really good point that we are a task force of HITACH. HITACH is the Federal Advisory Committee, and there are some rules that we need to, and protocols that we need to respect, as you've both discussed. And so I'm appreciative for the opportunity for our messy work effort of the task force to be so transparent and available to anyone who chooses to come on the ride with us as we're working through every week a variety of conversations. And we've worked, I know sometimes it may feel a little bit disjointed to folks, but some of the pain of going through comments and cross-checking things is the way we've been trying to be very transparent, not only with the members, but also with the public. And so I really am appreciative of the Federal Advisory Committee processes and the role that we play in supporting HITACH and their protocols. And so I think I'm looking forward to us advancing our discussions, especially around the broader intersection conversation, and being able to get for ourselves that are working in the weeds on this, to get our arms around all of the content and put together a cohesive draft report. So I think that will be coming rather rapidly. Wanted to also acknowledge ONC in that they have placed an editor under contract. Her name is Susan Kanon, and she's done work in the NCVHS realm. I think most recently I'm familiar with her 13th report to Congress crafting that she did with that team. I'm looking forward to all of us getting actively engaged in the Google document and providing comments and the task force, so that we can have something cohesive, so that when we get the feedback and we ask for the industry's broader review and comment processes that HITACH advances, they've got a complete picture to think about. Thank you, Cheryl.
All right, that's really was my summary, unless there were more questions. I think as others stated, we were thanked. I think everyone thought we've worked really hard and done a great job overall, and they're looking forward to our final draft that we are hoping to submit by October 15th for the October meeting. So we've come a long way, but we still have a lot of work to do. And appreciate you guys, working with us for another, maybe 6 weeks to get this finalized and resolved. And I will now turn it over to Alex.
Thanks. Yeah, it was really nice to hear words like support enthusiastically and exemplary work. And hats off to everyone on the task force and those who've provided public comment as well as presentations. Sometimes for myself, it's complex when you're in this sort of iterative work space to sometimes feel like you're making progress. And so I think last week's presentation helped all of us see how it's coming together. So we're now pivoting to the broader intersection of clinical administrative data, as Cheryl indicated in the summary recap last week. She introduced a picture to help us get our creative juices flowing, and hopefully now I'm seeing that my screen is being shared. Can everybody see it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So what happened? Through a collaborative effort after last week's robust discussion, we sat down and put together themes. And so we want to walk through what we think we heard from you last week in the discussion that really is about how we are going to think more holistically about the ecosystem and that convergence aspect of the different frameworks we have for governing clinical administrative data. And although we've tiptoed into this work a little bit through our prior authorization lens, we have the opportunity to step back and think more globally, and so we did that. We really jumped into the deep end of the pool last week on that. So what I would propose today is an approach that I walk you through our synthesis of what we think we heard from you last week, a few notes that we captured along the way from the HITAC to give us a start-off point to get our creative juices flowing this week, and that through the process, which I believe, Cheryl, you may be helping me along the way, making sure if we have questions raising, et cetera, but what we'd like
Absolutely.
To do is walk you, thank you, we'll walk you through, give you a recap. I'm going to kind of, the document will enable me to stop periodically, have some discussion, get your input. I'll make track changes notes along the way. We'll affirm that we heard correctly last week. We'll also bring those up to speed that couldn't have the pleasure of participating last week, giving them the opportunity to also weigh in. We'll then move into a couple new areas for us to start exploring. And that hopefully this will give us a nice kind of an approach this week and maybe another week or two to think through more broadly that convergence conversation. So I'm not seeing any hands raised. And so this is hot off the presses. I just finished editing it about 2 hours ago. Thank you to Michael and Cheryl for their input. In crafting this document, which we thought really one of the overall principles that we heard last week when we were talking about the broader intersection conversation was really portals don't have a place moving forward here when you think about the workflows of a given stakeholder. And we're not in this case necessarily talking about a patient, although maybe we could get there eventually, but I think we're really talking about the payer, provider, stakeholder. But overall, there was a comment about we really don't want portals. We don't think that's a part of the world moving forward necessarily. We'd want to meet people in their natural workflow. And so I don't know if there's any initial gut reactions to that. I'm not seeing any hands raised, so I'm going to keep moving. So if I'm going to give you an overview, and if something really gets in your craw, raise your hand, and we can stop and talk about it. The next section or the next thing that really emerged was that there was a converged ecosystem that needs to include additional actors from what we'd been discussing. In this case, we talked about public health, vital records, research, and policymaking type stakeholder or actors, and that we needed to strive for an environment that's supportive of public health and vital records without creating burden or new provider data capture activities. So what we already have today, as far as tools, we wanted to make those extend out. So I'm getting a bit of background, but hopefully no one else is. Additionally, as we thought about the use beyond clinical, this concept that's in our actual charter, it was around the reuse, so you know, capture, reuse kind of concept, and that we talked about labs, public health, registries, et cetera, can add burden to providers, but there's the value is even more apparent in an emergency situation. If folks could please put themselves on mute if they're not talking, I would greatly appreciate it. Labs, public health, and registries can add burden to providers, but the value is even more apparent in an emergency situation. You know, think about the California and Washington and Oregon and other Western fires that are happening right now, as an example. But the data has to be reconciled and integrated from different sources, and that we may have disconnect with the coding that's happening. And research has a different flavor than those other actors of labs, public health registries, et cetera, because they have different data and they use it differently. But also that vital records could also be connected and seemed very logical from what has been happening in a variety of places that it's already, like they're already connected for EHRs, data submissions through health information exchanges into public health registries. But there are, the problem with that is that we identify there's some states may have restrictions on bidirectional activities, which can kind of slow down the ecosystem. Capturing and exchanging data across all these functions seamlessly will require consistency, and that has real potential to reduce burden, this holy grail of record once and reuse, which really led us into some United States core data for interoperability discussion, which I'll get to in a little bit as a separate topic. There was this concept that a minimum data set that allows a refined way of looking at an aligned clinical administrative picture for these downstream stakeholders to see what they can do as a baseline that may need to be expanded later. So we're trying to figure out how to use what we have, align it with USCDI, which is very analogous to a number of the other prior authorization focuses that we've had, but we really need to take it to the next level and expand our thinking out. The first portion of our conversation was very much around this public health registries, and when I say labs, I'm referring to lab registries, not the other dynamics we discussed with prior authorization labs. And it ended up expanding this conversation into the supporting care specialty and long-term care delivery flows, and I'm going to talk about that next, but I'd like to pause and sort of talk about this aspect of public health focus that we had last week and see if there are any comments, concerns, or additions.
I don't see any hands raised, Alex. But I know I do know that there is some concern over data sharing. It came up actually in the FAST meeting Monday by a number of different constituents when they were talking about sharing clinical data related to how payers in particular might use that data for secondary purposes or other purposes. And I've actually heard that, directly. I think Stephen Lane brought it up in the comments of two of the sessions I was in multiple times. And he's on high tech. So and he has brought it up in high tech as well. So there was some concern about providing only the minimum necessary data for, data exchange requests, and then also using or repurposing that data for other purposes. And so I do think it's something that, in terms of the broader intersection, we need to be, at least speak to in some framework, because I do think that in most instances, the interoperability rules currently and any of those that I can imagine we would recommend, we wouldn't basically be saying that healthcare partners would ignore their business agreements, the BAAs that they already have in place. So if they are exchanging data for the purposes to support what we have here, that we wouldn't be saying they would depart from that and then use the data for any other purpose. But I do think it's something that requires some notation, and I bring it up because also when we're talking about public and health reporting and lab reporting, there has been concerns as well that data would be used for other purposes and not just those that it was submitted. So maybe we need to have some context around the data sharing for those purposes being limited unless there is authorization by the patient, because I think that has been a subject that's come up in multiple venues I've been part of as well, and it's caused some people to be concerned about sharing the data in those type of forums, and that the data might be used for other types of research beyond what they anticipated. And now that
you have, yes.
So there we go. I think Stephen was first, but go ahead.
Right there with you, Stephen.
Okie dokie, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, one of the things I want to point out is that that there's probably a type of standardization that you guys may not have thought about as much. We've talked a lot about terminology standardization and that sort of thing, which is all true and complicated. But we also need to, I think, put on our radar standardization of what an observation about a patient looks like. And that's going to sound arcane.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit to me. Could you just say that word again, an observation of how the patient looks?
No, an observation about a patient. So if you're going to assert that somebody has a problem at a particular point in time or doesn't have a problem or whatever, that the way that the terminology payload is delivered with appropriate context needs to be looked at and standardized, because that's the only way you can interpret the information. So there's things called statement models that are basically very small information models that standardize how you deliver payload about a patient, regardless of what that payload is.
I'm not sure how to capture what you're saying. For one, because I'm having a little bit of a difficulty on hearing you, but two, because I'm not sure if you're introducing a concept or you're taking us to a place of maybe we have a recommendation or something or an activity we need to undertake.
Right. So what I'm saying is that we need to not only consider some of the organizational things like consent and some of the terminology related or standards related things that we've talked about, say, you know, using ICD or whatever, but there's an intermediate level, a technical level called a statement model, and what that needs to be, I think, reviewed and some opining done. Without paying attention to how you send the data over, like who's the patient and when was the observation, and is the observation negated or uncertain or whatever, that reuse of the data seamlessly is impossible.
Yeah, so I'm understanding what he's saying there, Alex, is that, and I think this came up in the discussion where some people have recommended just sending the, the full clinical record, and that there is interpretation that needs to be had of that full clinical record. And also, in most cases, it's too much information, and then someone has to go fishing for it. So, at the end of the day, some information may only be applicable because of the state the person was in at that moment, and then never seen again or never, modeled again or something like that. Is that where you're going, Stephen?
Well, not exactly. Where I'm going is that for to reuse data, which is what we're talking about, record once and reuse, you have to have standards for how you represent the data, right? Like, we're going to use SNOMED for problem lists or something like that. But then you also need to have standards about observation about the data itself. Like, if I were to say Steve Brown has pneumonia.
I just lost like three words, so
if you were to want to say that Steve Brown has pneumonia on September 15th, it's important that you use pneumonia from SNOMED, but it's also important how you identify the patient and how you identify the time and how you identify whether it was, present or absent, things like that. So there are small information models that are metadata of an observation that are essential to at least address, because if you send them differently every time, it's just as hard to interpret as if you don't use the same standards.
Yeah, as somebody noted in the chat box, you keep going underwater a little bit with your audio, so I don't know if you're driving or not, but I think what you're trying to do is also talk about the actual status of the patient, which sounds very institutionally oriented or hospital environment based, but it's I'm struggling as I'm listening to you to understand what you're saying and how it tracks to provenance of the data and its permitted uses aspect, and if maybe that's where you were headed.
Well, it's all of that. So provenance, is that any better? Provenance
would also really be wicked.
Provenance would also be included in the metadata about an observation, like, right, where did it come from? Who made it, right? And if you don't include that in a standard way, and you send the blob of information to someone, they don't have any way to parse all that out, right? So how do you reuse data to receiving organization unless the metadata is standardized as well as the observation?
Okay, that helps.
Right. So how do you know, for example, that if you say someone has no known drug allergies, it's the same as having drug allergies that's negated?
Okay. I'm trying to capture some notes here. I know that we had a lot of hands that came up in the queue. So what I want to do mm-hmm. is see if Arian and Neil or Jocelyn, who put themselves in the queue, I want to piggyback and discuss your point, and if they do, I think, Cheryl, we should call on them. If not, I think we should then run the gamut. And Jocelyn is saying,
"Well, this is Anil.
Pick me." Okay, go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, so I'm just very quickly, it is about the comments that have been made. I think we have to separate out, for example, the secondary use of data that's provisioned by HIPAA after de-identification from alternate uses or additional uses that were not contemplated when the data was being collected, the whole repurposing. And I think those are two different concepts, and I want to make sure we don't mix the two up, because I see the word secondary purposes up in the paragraph up there, and I think that's important that we not confuse the two issues. The second comment would be about what Steve is saying around the metadata that helps us understand how information was collected. I think you can keep going through layer after layer after layer, because then you could start getting really, really complicated. I think the first step would simply be to make sure that existing standards that exist, for example, loin codes or when making observations, and that all the details that would be surrounding them are actually completed, which seems to be still a challenge right now. I get Steve's point, but we're not even close to having to deal with that issue right now. We see a lot of secondary data, and I'm using that word loosely. We see a lot of data in our business, and I tell you, even when standards are being used, the problem isn't just context. It's just the standards are being used in a variety of ways. So I just want to make sure I'm not minimizing what Steve is saying, but we've got a long way before we can start to standardize the metadata. We still need to get some best practices and guardrails around the use of standards that exist already, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Even if you do that really well, though, I'm telling you, you're still going to fail.
Possibly, but I think as the broader standards committees and communities start to sort of grow with their ability to start standardizing what you're calling metadata. I mean, the perfect example would be if you've got two blood test results for the same test, two different machines, don't I need to know which machine it was if there's different normal ranges? So you can keep going down this road where there's more and more detail added to the point where the payloads are very, very complicated, and you're basically reproducing the entire universe of information that was being generated. What I'm just saying is that we might need to do this in phases and let people catch up to what might need to be standardized. That metadata could kill any practical uses of the secondary data or secondary use of the data if we're not careful.
So I saw that Jocelyn raised her hand. I'm also wanting to chime in here. So, Arian, you did not. So, I'm going to dump to Jocelyn next.
Sorry, I did raise my hand, and I've been waiting patiently.
No, I know, but I was asking. Are you wanting to comment on Steve Brown's suggestion? That's what I was trying to wrap up before I.
I will. I'll wait my turn.
I'll be quick, Arian. So, from from my perspective, when I listen to, I think, the very legitimate concerns that I hear Steve raising, I think that they're part about getting us through the maturity of using new standards. But there's a couple things, I think, when we think about recommendations and sort of where we weigh in that are going to be important. I think the first is understanding what value sets we're using and defining those value sets in a meaningful way and creating some sort of minimum bar, right, for compliance with people using the standards to be able to show that you're demonstrating it. But I also think that there's this bigger picture, and I have the privilege or good fortune or bad luck, I'm not really sure which, to get to work across a number of the different standards orgs. Each standard org treats sort of getting to that semantic interoperability, I think that Steve is digging at, in very different ways. And I think that there are best practices out there. And so I find that we're often having conversations about the value of using FHIR, sort of raw FHIR at an API level, and then the importance of the implementation guide on top of a implementation guide for a specific use and how that data is being used sort of fit for purpose for that use, I think, which helps to tease out sort of why it was gathered in the first place. And I see that now that we're a couple years in with DaVinci, we're in the process of creating example sets, more and more examples of how somebody would, from one type of interaction to another interaction from a particular implementation guide, really building out almost like libraries, right? Of if you're going to do this for this specific diagnostic scenario, this is how you would use it, even to a lower level of granularity. And that's growing, right? That's us figuring out as an industry how we work together with these particular domains with this particular standard to get to that best practice way to use it. It doesn't get all the way down. And I think that there is danger in us not moving forward. I think we have to start using it, but we have to use these tools with an eye towards growing and maturing, but also safety and sort of, you know, caution around full automation when we know that the data inside of it might be imperfect. NCPDP doesn't use the implementation guide and example set. They use a different methodology around there being the base standard and transaction and then an implementation guide that goes along with it. And that as more and more people use the guide and questions come up, we just keep augmenting that. We basically expand FAQs. We get better and better definitions. So sort of the guide that tells you how to use it can evolve faster and ahead of the sort of slower wheels of an actual standard maturing. So I think there are tools out there across all of the different standards that get at, I think, the point that Steve is making. I think that we just need to be very clear that being able to exercise that type of granular type of feedback and guidance is incredibly important to make sure that whatever is rolled out is actually usable in the current world that we live in versus some perfect state that doesn't exist yet, right? And I'm going to cede to Arian.
Arian, the floor is yours.
All right, thank you. So two things. First of all, on the original topic of privacy, data use minimization, the recommendations already make this note. I think it probably would be good to put it in the preamble as well, just if we're worried that we've forgotten the note about minimum necessary and data use minimization, that is appropriately captured. We should look at it and just make sure it is. Number two,
before you get off to the races, because I can't type that fast.
All right.
Privacy and security by design, I'm talented, but not that talented.
Yeah.
By design is a part of our PA principles and recommendations. And so one of the things I think you're saying is it's so important, let's call this out in the report, call out in preamble and stage setting in the report.
That's right. So I think people will not read the recommendations. They'll only read the executive summary, and it's important for things that are as foundational as privacy and security to repeat it in the executive summary so that people who are scanning it go, oh, okay, we're not sending the data off to the wolves, and they'll interpret that anyway, but at least we're at least we're reiterating it appropriately.
Got it. Thank you.
The second piece, just related to the tangent that we were just on, is that the concept of information models is one that we've been at and thinking about for a long time. There's work, for example, that CIMI has done, work that's been done as part of FHIR to create higher-level information models. I agree generally with the concept that information models are a good thing, and also that if we wait until the perfect information models are developed before we get to standardizing EPA, that we won't get there. That there's a lot of value in getting EPA information flowing, even if it's not backed by an ontology and an information model that specifies the precise meaning of a clinical encounter. And one of the values of doing that is that we can always improve and iterate it over time in response to the needs on the ground, and also take advantage of assuming that we use the right appropriate standard, take advantage of additional standardization that is being done, as I said, orthogonally to this concept of EPA. So my recommendation with respect to this topic would be that we reiterate that information models are a good thing, that the approach that we've taken to unify standards allows EPA to take advantage of information models, and also that the approach that we've taken with respect to incremental and iterative improvement allows us to not make the perfect the enemy of the good, and allows us to make progress towards more robust ontologically rigid and specified clinical interoperability.
Thank you. So, I think that's entirely reasonable, and setting, you know, we shouldn't just be setting goals for tomorrow. I've included, and so I would agree with what's been said. I've included in the chat some information if anyone wants to look about the CIMI work in HL7 with something called analysis normal form that might be informative.
Yeah, see, I guess I'm also looking to take your general reaction and translate that into so you're asking for a guiding principle, are you asking for ideal state commitment, are you proposing a specific recommendation? Because as we're going to do this body of work a little very differently than we did our prior authorization deep dives. Here's about stepping back and saying, we've done a great amount of work with GP, guiding principles, ideal state, and recommendations. So where do we, what haven't we talked about? Where do we need to go next? So with wanting to craft a report and to work with an editor to get that crafted and to get your review feedback, and that is a collective, your task force review feedback, and have it delivered a week in advance, ideally, if we can make it happen, that would be perfect. A week before the October 21st event, we haven't figured out all of our milestones, but we have had our kickoff with the editor, and we do have a timeline. We'll try to figure out our milestone timelines next week. I feel, Cheryl, that we need to start asking folks to be very specific. And once they introduce an idea, we would hear then, I'd like to see a guiding principle, an ideal state or recommendation, and I think that will help us start to round out our approach. So Steve, is there anything that you would like to, since I didn't make that request to anybody up front.
Right. So if you're trying to hit the target of record once and reuse, then this is, terminology standards are a necessary evil. And I'm arguing that small information models are also a necessary evil that can be implemented gradually. These are, I would ask, calling them evils, probably not the right thing for a report, but, you know, ongoing capability enhancement in the areas of both terminology standards and information modeling standards to include statement models are going to be necessary for the long haul. If you really want to record once and reuse.
And that may go back to some of our that may, so if I could translate what you're saying that our recommendations need to have fully address that. And I think we have some of those things already addressed within our recommendations. I'm actually not hearing you ask for something new other than the people that would do the work to do the data mappings and the modeling to maybe span the two ecosystems need to include that.
It's additional analysis work, not just at the level of terminology mapping, but at the level of small information model development and adoption.
Okay.
So you can throw it all in the same standard stuff. It's just it's a slightly different view of the standards that are necessary.
Okay.
That doesn't negate anything that's been said. It's an addition for ongoing work.
So we need to think about what's the specific ask, or is it this something in an awareness that somebody who does the detailed dive, because we're trying to address what needs to happen and recommended where to go. We're not saying how things are happening. So somebody picks up some of our recommendations is going to have to take, if HITECH agrees and elects to advance these to the Office of National Coordinator, then we're going to, there would likely be work that would happen on the other side, and that's part of that deep dive.
Oh, absolutely. We're not here to make SNOMED better or whatever either, right? But we are suggesting that, you know, various standards be enhanced, and this is a different type of standard that needs to be on whoever inherits this mess's radar.
Got it. I think that really very much helps me kind of understand where you were coming from on that. So thank you. I think I've captured it, and I also see that Anil's hand is up.
Yeah. And again, I'm not to negate anything that's been said as well. I think Steve's right on. Let me just give you a slightly different perspective, though. One of the things that we often see in clinical practice, and I'm fortunate enough to still practice very part-time, is that we might inadvertently add some burden to the clinical setting if we have to start collecting information in a way that the information models can represent. So one way we could balance this out is I'd like the maturity process. I think the information models are critical over time to really make the best use of the data for secondary purposes. But perhaps what we ought to do as a recommendation is to say that it ought to be done in stages of priority. And one area we can use as an example would be an infectious disease or an emerging pathogens, and simply say that the information models that should be done to align clinical and administrative data for secondary use would be in areas that are a high priority to our society right now, as opposed to adding burden in all facets of what a primary care doc or a specialist might do with their patients, focusing on a very narrow sliver so that we could really make a difference in an area where having a better understanding of the data might be more critical, as opposed to having a very general sense of the use of information models. I'm just worried that we're going to add burden to the system that's already overburdened.
Yeah, I mean, I would never intend that there would be any added burden whatsoever. And if any user interface was designed so as to make people adopt to a different information model than what they already done, rather than just standardizing it, then they failed miserably. Providers should never see this.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right, but unfortunately what we often see is that the burden of standardization on the back end often will impact the front end. Just to give you an example we can all relate to is going from ICD-9 to ICD-10, you know, find one doc that thinks that it's not a little bit harder with ICD-10 just to figure out exactly what you want to say about a patient. Better for downstream data. It's better for, you know, public health, better for billing, but for the clinicians, it's a little bit harder. And all I'm suggesting is that as long as we recognize that, our recommendation should be, let's move towards this direction and give tangible areas where we can introduce the community to build these information models in an area that's going to be important to all of us.
Thank you. I'm going to I see no further hands up. I think robust discussion there. I started to capture a bit of a recommendation and in consideration, I'm going to, of our time here today, I want to start to move on to the next area that we discussed last week, the supporting of care specialties and long-term care delivery data flows. Along the same lines is a bit of what we've been discussing, but this is like around transitions of care, it's still in the clinical setting, and this is more about exploring how to create a system where data available to providers can be easily made available to others in the care continuum. And although we have an issue related to tools sometimes that we don't have everybody having the same tools, I'm gonna defer that topic for a moment. So that we can focus on, you know, the information being available to the relevant actor and their workflow downstream, so that they can again use it in their various workflow environments to help them with addressing the gaps in care, because sometimes we don't always understand what's needed downstream. So one part is to make sure that it gets there, and I want to talk about that part here before we get to not everybody has the same on-ramps or tools. So any concerns with this recap of a theme that we really have a continuum of data flow consideration that we need to address, and that there are some interesting dynamics when you deal with specialty care or long-term care environments and the porting of the data? Anil, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, and I think this is something that we live every single day as clinicians, and anyone who gets quality reporting where they're told what the care gaps are and our definition of a care gap versus the plan's definition of a care gap. And I'm sure Cheryl would agree with this. Every single ACO, every single value-based care contract will have a different set of metrics. Some are gaps in care that we would agree with. Some are simply different metrics. And so I think we have to consider I think I made a comment a few meetings ago that if there's a way that we could somehow share the rules that folks are using to identify these metrics, because what might be considered a care gap from the health plan's point of view, who may be measuring these, and the patient could be quite confused when I share one set of recommendations and the plan might share another, because all of a sudden we're, quote, sharing data. We need to understand the different roles that people have within the ecosystem. What is the role of the physician and the clinician? What is the role of the plan? The last thing we want to do is have a patient be told that they have a care gap that the clinicians don't agree with, or at least have the opportunity to discuss with their patient. And I think having that somehow be brought into the discussion around the intersection of clinical and administrative, we have to recognize the fact that there's not going to be agreement always when you start to mash this data. What is a true care gap and what is a quality metric that somehow needs to be satisfied? And how we recommend that come together may simply be that we start to share the rules that are being used to measure. And that harmonization could start pretty quick. I don't know if that makes sense, but the last thing we want to do is add more confusion to the patient.
As I'm listening to you, I'm trying to parse out, you know, like, what is it that we can do here? So it seems to me that there's sort of this general principle about supporting it, but there's this challenge of...
Well, I think there's two things. I think there are two things.
Please go ahead.
So I think the first thing is the recognition that simply by sharing data back and forth between the ecosystem partners, that we're not somehow going to have a magical way of identifying care gaps. That's just not going to happen. There's so many different rules that people use. That's the first thing, is that it just makes it a little easier, but it doesn't remove some of the challenges. The second thing is that we have to keep the patient in the center. What's in the patient's best interest, and how do we take this intersection and give the patient a harmonized understanding of what's happening with their health and healthcare? That, I think, is not for us to decide as a committee. I think we need to make sure that various groups understand that they're going to have a new tool set, which is the combined data, how do we now create a harmonized view for the patient so that they're at the center?
But I guess I'm so you're trying to take this back to our existing guiding principles. I agree with you that the patient's the center, and that's part of the by design kind of foundation, along with privacy and security, that we're trying to build all of this stuff on. So if there's a...
Well, I maybe others that are more artful with the language can figure this out better, but what I'm trying to say here is that we can't lose sight of the fact that all of a sudden, because we got more data, and data from two different places, that all that folks can start running metrics on that data without having some unintended consequences where the patient now may be confused. How we say that and how we align that and harmonize it, I think, is what I thought that this group is going to try to put some guardrails around.
Right. I mean, this is Cheryl, and I would like to just, I understand where you're going with this, Anil, and I do think that there is the recommendation that you had, which is focus on the rules for the care gap versus the sharing the gaps themselves. And by communicating the rules for the care gaps would be potentially more helpful to the clinicians. And I'm, you know, trying to measure this against like a few examples, like, you know, someone's come out of the hospital and they haven't had a follow-up an appointment in 30 days with their clinician. You know, to us, that would be a care gap that we would send to our PCP and say, you know, they should come in and see you because they've been out of the hospital for 30 days and don't have any follow-up care. Or, you know, we received the prescription, so we're sharing this information back to you because, you know, you can then reconcile with a prescription that you ordered for this patient.
I think, Cheryl.
Let's suffice to say that care gaps come from multiple places. Some are related to starts and HEDIS. Some are related to quality, which you mentioned already. And some are, you know, kind of legislated. I know in some HIEs that are state mandated, some of the quality measures are provided to us, not things that anyone is, you know, choosing to follow. So there's all of those things. So reconciling how we handle all of that, you're saying that just because we have the information available doesn't mean it's going to be easier for the patient. It could actually make more burden.
Well, the patient may not have more burden. They just may be more confused. To give you a perfect example, it happens today already, but it happens in a more limited way because the clinical data, one side may not have it fully. But let's take something like colon cancer screening. You know, if I had a patient who had, you know, chronic conditions, which a colonoscopy by a gastroenterologist may be risky, the last thing I would want to do is send that person for a colonoscopy. But it's quite possible, and that the person might end up getting a note from their plan saying, hey, you need to go get a colonoscopy, because I think there are ways we can get around this. But my only point is that all of a sudden there's going to be more data out there and more opportunity to be misaligned with the way the health plan might see the care of a patient or a member and the way the doc might, he or she might see the care of their patient. And what we ought to do is just recognize that we have some potential for great harm, and that we ought to be working at closing that gap of what's going to exist. We see it today in a limited way, but when you have more data, it's going to be worse.
Yeah, so I think that, thank you, Cheryl, because I think that really helped me further wrap my arms around what Anil was saying. And I think my part of my challenge here is that this could include addressing gaps in care was an example that was brought up. The main category here was around the data flow for the care specialty or long-term care, more in the transition, so that I would hope in the situation that you explained would be that, you know, if my PCP is doing a preventative care maintenance and they send me a reminder while I'm in a rehab, I need a colonoscopy, I see it and then I look at my, you know, my rehab doctor and say, hey, I'm supposed to be getting a colonoscopy. And that what would have really happened is that there would already have been communication because the primary care doc, my primary care, and my the situation of being in a rehab may, because I've just had knee surgery or I'm recovering from a fall or something, that there would have been care coordination there so that the rehab would say, no, she can't have one of those. She's on blah, blah, blah right now. She has to wait. And that would never have come into my sphere of awareness from the backdrop conversation other than my interaction to be able to say, hey, somebody made me aware of this. I can then say to my rehab doc, made it aware of it, and then the rehab doc can say, yeah, we've clarified. You're all good to go for right now. We're going to let you just continue to do what you're doing. No, wait, no colonoscopy for you right now. And leave it at that, unless I ask more questions.
Yeah, in an ideal situation, if the, quote, rules for how you're identifying all those needed services and all those gaps in care, if they were known to both parties at the same time, absolutely, in an ideal situation, it could be right. But in a non-ideal situation, the patient could be left wondering, do I go with what my doc is telling me, or do I go with what my health plan is telling me? And so all I'm suggesting is that we try to find ways that we start, just like what Steve was saying about the information model for how observations are made, we need to start thinking about how are we going to exchange the information about how one is determining what needs to be present at a transition of care, or what determines a, quote, care gap, because we would all have slightly different opinions about what a care gap might be for certain types of patients, and get the community at large starting to think about how we move closer to that so that we're exchanging these knowledge nuggets that can help us identify these care gaps. So we're all on the same page, and the patient is not being given two different answers by two different, you know, siloed folks, if you will. Does that make any sense?
So much more.
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah, it really did help me get my arms better around that. Thank you. Are there other comments on that topic? I'm not seeing any raised, Cheryl, but just want to do a shout out in case I missed something.
I don't see any either.
Okay. So let's tackle another one before we go to public comment in just 4 short minutes. So have and have nots on ramps. So there are these haves and have-nots in the world, folks who have technology stacks and resources to help them with those technology tools in the toolbox, and that we're all at different levels of maturity, and it needs to be possible to integrate data at the individual patient level. So we've discussed this in a variety of ways already under prior authorization, but we felt it emerged last week that it'll be important to start identifying the system needs for common interactions and then expand to develop a base template with an eye towards it being reusable and extensible, that not everyone is on fire yet, but moving in that direction by common conceptual frameworks moves us in that right direction, and that incentivizes somehow, well, you know, if we have incentives, they'll move us through sort of a stepwise approach. Not seeing any hands up. I'm hoping that made sense to everybody, and that's what the silent means. I'm going to introduce the last topic that we discussed last week, which was USCDI, administrative data, what are the USCDI data concepts and elements that needs to reflect, I'm not sure that we wrote this sentence very well. So I think it's what concepts and elements have to be reflective in USCDI was what we were trying to get at. And we need to review, we need a review of current administrative transactions and associated value/code sets to ensure USCDI supports downstream and clinical administrative functions. So to me, this becomes a recommendation that we need to have created and bolster out maybe what we already have in prior authorization. I think that's what we were hearing last week.
I believe that's what we heard. I don't know. I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to start the next new topics because I believe we are seconds away from going into public comment, if I remember the timeline correctly. Oh, it's 4:20, so I have 5 more minutes. Okay. So I apologize for not remembering correctly. So let's go ahead and introduce the next topic, which actually gets into, I'm going to skip over price transparency for a minute because you got a nice teaser and sort of setup for that from Cheryl. So I'm going to set up the synthetic data and testing aspect. And so one of the things that we have discussed extensively is the piloting and certification aspect. And so one of the things that wanted to talk about was this idea of the fact that historically we've not had testing or the synthetic data to support a testing ecosystem in the administrative side of the house. So we struggle mightily when at NCVHS we receive a request to upgrade a standard vocabulary or a transaction standard, and that we always want to find quantitative and qualitative information to pass along to our federal colleagues to support the impact, regulatory impact analysis and cost estimations that they have to create to justify, they have to create to fulfill the Procedures Act and to help justify the reason why the rule should move forward. And so we have some tools in the ecosystem. There's a Cynthia is an example, or Aegis testing mechanisms are also other examples where we have synthetic data. But thinking there might need to be a recommendation to have an ecosystem with built-in players, synthetic data, and testers to make sure all this stuff really works. So that would be a topic that I'd like to hear back from folks but we can do a couple minutes round robin on that before we go to public comment at 4:20. And so Rom sent us a note in the chat box. What is the process you will have in place for verification and validation? I think that's a part of there's one testing something before it gets advanced. And there's another part of, I think, verification and validation. You're looking for compliance after the fact. And Mom, can you come on audio with us? I know you're typing in the chat box, but would you like to? Yeah, we don't know that he's on audio today. Sorry, he's just on. Apologize. We can't have that interaction because that would be fabulous to have. So he's not able to connect via audio. Maybe he can send us some additional thoughts or weigh in on this when we are able to merge some more robust content into our Google Doc. Are there thoughts from anyone else? I see Rom's typing, but I want to see if there's any other hands raised, and there aren't. I'm inferring that this is either not of interest, it's straightforward and you agree with it, or you're all multitasking.
Okay, I'm not multitasking. I would have to say that synthetic data and testing, I can only liken it to what we've done with trying to do the testing with some of the pilots. Not really the testing, but I guess I'm thinking about the pilots. But with the DaVinci testing, obviously there's really more focus on passing back and forth the connections and the capability rather than the actual data itself. So I can't say that I know enough about what the requirements are for the creation of this synthetic testing. I know in trying to use synthetic data organizational-wide, it's been a difficult challenge, quite honestly, because of all the connections where you have to have, you know, some providers with networks and others without, and then you've got to have members that are assigned to different products, and so they have to be valid products. So all of the different connections make synthetic testing a challenge. I guess is all I can say from a health plan's perspective. I don't know about from a provider perspective.
I think we're ready to turn it over at this point to Cheryl, if you'd like to go ahead and to Lauren, if you'd like to go ahead and,
sure.
And then I see Juan is now raising his hand, which means I think he may have gotten on audio, so we'll come back to you when we're done with public comment, Ron.
Okay.
Thanks, Alex. Operator, if we could open the line, please.
Thank you. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the comment queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause for one moment. There are no comments at this time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ram, are you on audio now? He's not. Okay. I see his hand raised, so I'm a little challenged in understanding if he wants me, if he's going to send us a chat message or...
Yeah, it doesn't look like he's on audio.
Yeah, the support team has confirmed that in the chat box to me. So,
and for some reason,
he is on.
Anyway, yeah, can you hear me?
Hi, Ron.
Hello?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. For some reason, I can't speak through the WebEx system, so I had to, you know, dial in. My comment is kind of generic in a way, because once you have this whole ecosystem, we should also have a mechanism or a protocol for testing it. Test protocols, sample some use cases and those kinds of things, and how do you test the whole thing. So we need to have some kind of a mechanism for that. Like, for example, in EHRs, for meaningful use, we have some test methods. We test them before anyone can buy that EHR. Similarly, do we have some kind of a strategy here? That's the question.
I think that's what we're looking to craft, to identify what it is that we think we need to thoughtfully recommend an ecosystem in the future that can meet our testing needs. So it's a blank slate.
Yeah, okay. So I was just wondering if anyone has any ideas in terms of the testing processes involved. So that's all. Otherwise, I will think about something.
Yeah, because I think there's also not only just the, what is really needed to look at, you know, especially if we're going to start to really bring together the administrative and clinical data, you know, we're doing some connectathons and testing, such as Cheryl discussed, but if we want to design something and test clinical and administrative, we need to have, you're right, an ecosystem and an end-to-end kind of testing mechanism and a platform. But I think that's also going to take an investment of money and an investment of somebody to own it in the feds and to help move it along. And this might be something that we say what we'd like to have, but we don't necessarily say how it has to happen. And I suspect Jocelyn has a suggestion because I just saw her hand raised.
Yep, okay,
Lauren,
thank you.
Jump in next.
Well, I was just going to share a little bit of a perspective from the trenches, I guess. And what we're seeing is, I think there's a number of commercial opportunities where folks are really seeing themselves as playing that role of being the place, the sandboxes where people can come and validate and test, both from the testing tool vendors and also from some both for-profit and nonprofit entities. So it might be worth understanding sort of what's happening out in the market. So like I know, for instance, we work closely with MyHIM. They're a deployment member of DaVinci. They joined specifically to help us get our implementation guides out to scale, and they've got test beds, sandboxes, synthetic data as part of the solutions they're offering to implementers. And then we have folks like what used to be HSP, it's Logica now.
HSPC,
I think is what it was before. And they're providing for free sandboxes for folks to come implement, get up and running with FHIR resources, but less services available for that free service. And so organizations like what we're doing with DaVinci is we come with our test data and, you know, and essentially, you know, work with Logica to use their sandboxes, and we bring the data to go along with the implementation guides we're building. And I think other accelerators are doing similar work like that. There is, I think, exclamation point, a need to really understand and look at what the base minimum set of test data across these data sets and these standards needs to be, and who needs to fund that and make sure that it's available. Because I think that sort of the point above this idea of there being unequal access, depending on how much capital somebody has to bring to this type of innovation work, I think is incredibly important. And so being able to meet people with the right tool at the right place for their available technology capabilities, I think, is incredibly important. And the free market will supply some of that solution, but there needs to be some sort of floor, I believe, that the feds need to help us create.
So really what I hear you talk about are the attributes of a sort of recommendation. And what I'm hearing is, you know, we don't necessarily need all of our taxpayers to go dollars to go do this, but there has to be, and somebody has to get the wheel cranking, and that the feds could possibly help us do that. You know, sort of we have the chapel environment, we have certified product environment. They've come up with ways to have the marketplace jump into the mix of that, but still have that oversight to make sure that we're staying on the path that was intended in the beginning, and orchestrating some of those resources and tying the pieces up together. So, did I synthesize that?
Yeah, I think so. And Alex, I think it's probably also worth calling out that there is a discussion, at least on the FHIR side of the world, around this entire topic in the ONC FAST group. And so there are folks looking at this for FHIR, but I think that our vector is really, you know, where the three worlds or four worlds, you know, collide around administrative data and clinical data. And I do think that, you know, any one of us that implements understands sort of the licensing challenges around just getting some minimal data set allowed to be available for folks to test creates, you know, it's not impossible, but it does create burden and time and coordination efforts to make the more proprietary data sets available for, you know, folks that are actually trying to do early adoption and implementation of where these worlds are starting to dive together.
Yeah, I have some thoughts about this from some of the things that we did in evaluating 6020. The Division of National Standards actually put a big contract out there for at least one organization, maybe multiple. They can't remember. I think it's just one to take a look at doing the testing and evaluation, so we could get that like ROI assessment done beforehand. And that I don't think turned out as quite the way everyone thought it might. But that is a tale for another day to explore, because I do believe, Cheryl, you're up to talk about next steps. Or is that me? I think that's me today. Okay, so it is me today. So I mentioned earlier that we had hired, our ONC had retained an editor to assist us. We are needing to, you're getting that person up to speed. And in parallel to our task force efforts, we have the Google document that has a number of items in it, and we've been working our way through comments. Shout out to Arian, who may have already dropped
And Rich Landon for any hanging portions of your recommendations work. There was purple text we're still trying to.
I'm aware.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't. Thank you. And I'm hoping that maybe we can get you to look at that so we can figure out what, if there's anything that you want to bring back for us to discuss to wrap up some of the prior authorization work, that would be great because we're going to be also figuring out the next steps with the Google Doc and starting to take the work we're having here in the Barter intersection and merge that into that. So want to make sure we wrap up the recommendations work and also the rest of the comments. So we're hoping to do some of that work on our call and then to consider our discussion. So we probably need to finish up this synthetic discussion and then we'll need to discuss the transparency aspect as well. So we encourage everyone, not encourage, we ask all of our task force members to go in and review the contents that's out there so far for prior authorization synthesis work so we can get that cleaned up and buttoned down a bit as we start to move into needing to craft the next set of content so that we can actually have a comprehensive draft report. Cheryl, do you have any other final parts, parting words?
Thank you, Alex. Yes, if you could please go in and make your comments by end of day of Friday, that would be very, very helpful. So Alex and I have a few days, and we're meeting with the editor next week, so it's very important that we get the rest of your comments on the existing draft this week. Thank you.
Good refined point there. Thank you, Cheryl. With that said, have a great rest of your day. Thanks for participating and listening in on our task force efforts. Take care, everybody. Lauren?
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.